You're listening to EPN, the e-podcast network.
This is e-commerce radio and your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to e-commerce radio, your EPN channel, where you can get in on the inside track and find out what others are doing to experience great results with their online stores, whether it's the latest tools, e-commerce platforms, or marketing techniques. This is where we talk about how to have a successful e-commerce experience. Joining us on the program today is Paul Klebanoff, a young entrepreneur who built a multi-million dollar e-commerce business and lost it all before the age of 30. Today, he is a marketing educator and speaker at SEMrush.com, the world's leading competitive research tool for online marketers. Paul, certainly a pleasure to have you with us today here on e-commerce radio.
It's great to be here. Super excited.
Yes, and we're certainly happy to have you with us as well and looking forward to hearing your journey as an entrepreneur. So for starters, if you would, can you tell us a little bit about yourself to kick things off today?
Yes. So my name is Paul. So this time last year, like you suggested, I ran a fairly large e-commerce business, PPL Stores LLC, in the home decor space. It had a flagship of four websites. And so it ranked at one of the top internet retailers in the United States. I grew that business from zero to over $3.1 million a year. And as you suggested, a few years back, I lost the business entirely. And today I sit here in the secret headquarters at SEMrush as a marketing educator and speaker.
And thanks for giving us some background there. Now, I'm dying to know what happened and how you lost your business. But before I ask that question, tell us more about how you started and maybe some insight or strategies that you used to grow so quickly before everything crashed and burned, so to speak.
Yeah, sure. So it was back around in 2008. I was still in my cubicle typing away on my keyboard. And I was developing websites, so I was a web developer and then slowly developed into a marketing role. And then after work, I continued with my obsession all the way dating back to middle school and high school with the stock market. So I was trading penny stocks at the time. Those are stocks that trade below $10 a share. I usually entered positions of stocks that traded between $1 and $5 a share. The reason was because a larger companies, blue chip stocks, they were very slow. They didn't move. Wall Street invested in those companies. And so I needed something that actually moved, that had a small amount of capital, which was just my paycheck at the time. So I started trading, and I didn't buy stocks I short sold. So I made money when the stocks went down. So long story short, what ended happening is I started every single night. I would profile stocks. So I would go look at the highest percent gainers, and then I would see if their actual increase in stock price was justified, if it was based on strong fundamentals like earnings, or if it was just fluff, maybe a press release, awareness that they've received for a new product or for a new feature, or they have a new partnership or SEO. And so I would look at the catalyst, and then I would do technical analysis to determine when and where to buy the stock, or to short the stock rather. And then that would be my evenings. And so I was averaging between $300 to $400 a day on the stock market. But the issue when you short sell stocks is that when you buy stocks in the very beginning, when you start buying and you buy a stock, for example, at $2 a share and it goes down to $1, or you buy a stock at $1, it goes down to zero, you lose $1 a share. But when you short sell, there's an infinite potential of loss, because essentially you sell the stock before you buy it. And so you make money when it goes down. So if the stock goes from $1 to $2 or from $2 to $3, you buy it $1, it goes to $3 and $4 and $5. You have all this upside that you're losing. Now you're losing $1 a share, $2, $3, et cetera. And so what started happening was I was very young and I had really poor risk management skills. And so I would see opportunities that would come around maybe like once a year, and I would want to seize those opportunities. So I would put the majority of my capital into one idea. And so what started to happen was I had a few bad trades where I got short squeezed, and I had days where I lost literally like 90% of what I've been working to gain for that entire period. And so it was a large roller coaster ride for me. And so I decided that the stock market was not for me, that I just wanted to focus on my job, focus on developing and building websites and digital marketing strategies. I was learning SEO at the time, working on very large websites, very big brands like pollen.com. And so I stopped day trading altogether. And so when I stopped trading, I started looking at different opportunities to starting my own business. And I decided to get into e-commerce. And so the challenges that I faced is when I first got into e-commerce, it was very easy for me to technically launch a website. So building an e-commerce site was very easy for me because I came from a technical background, a web development background, and I understood the marketing strategies. But I didn't know exactly how to stock the store with actual physical products. So what I started doing was I started making a list of all the events and all the events in an industry. So I went into home decor, and so I made a list of all these events. I would go to their websites. I would look at the exhibitors, and then I would contact the actual brands, for example, like furniture brands like Paladin and Universal, et cetera, and I would ask them if I could stock their products, if they could open up an account. And so they would start asking me all these questions, like, what's your minimum order? And I would say, can I buy piece by piece? And I got called a clueless clown once, because it's like you're calling a manufacturer, the largest brand in the world that deals with huge buyers, and you're on the phone asking if you could buy piece by piece. They were asking me if I had a showroom, if I had a show window, a store. And so I didn't meet any of the requirements in the beginning to start an e-commerce store and to make accounts with these large brands. So I saw that the brands were getting a lot of volume on Google, and I couldn't open up an account. So slowly but surely, I started making account with the smaller manufacturers, the brands that drop ship their product. The issue was that they weren't very profitable, and everyone was selling these brands and these manufacturers. The profit margins were very tiny. And so it was really difficult for me to start making accounts with those large brands. So what I started to do is one night I was looking, I made a list of all the brands that I contacted, and I made this list of all the sales reps, and specifically the sales reps that said yes to me, and then the sales reps that said no to me. And I just made two columns in Excel. And then I started profiling the sales reps that said yes to me on LinkedIn, and I started building a social graph. And then what I started to see as they connected with me on LinkedIn is that the sales reps that said no to me were connected to the sales reps that said yes to me. And so they were in the same social sphere. So I had this idea that I would contact the sales reps that said yes to me, and I would essentially try to buy influence. And what I mean by that is that I would offer them, for example, a contract on a contract basis, an hourly fee. They would charge me maybe like $167, $180 an hour, is a ridiculous sum of money. And I would ask them to open up accounts on my behalf. So, for example, I had a sales rep, and he would call on my behalf to these manufacturers. And instead of me asking to open up an account, he would ask on my behalf. And the idea was that this sales rep had already connections within the industry, and he knew the industry very well. He had friendships in the industry. And so as he started calling, he went around the red tape. And so for me, that was one of the pivotal points in my career, where I started creating accounts with a lot of the biggest brands in the world, merely because in this case, the messenger was more important than the actual message. So that was one of those obstacles that I had. And as soon as I overcame that obstacle, I started carrying a lot of products. And so eventually my database of products grew to over 30,000 name brand products. And I carried the same products that would be carried in Neiman Marcus for furniture, Bloomingdale's. It was the largest and biggest brands in the world.
Okay, Paul, so once you made the accounts and you had inventory and products to stock, how did you sell them? Get into that a little in detail.
So once I started stocking the e-commerce store with products, what started to happen was I started utilizing all those skills that I built up previously. So I knew a lot about search engine optimization. So organically, my store had so many products that I would just appear on page one of Google for all of the different SKUs that I stocked. And so most of the searches that I initially got were transactional queries of people just looking for a better price or an offer on a product that they saw in their brick and mortar retailer. And so I would get a lot of organic traffic. So initially, the more SKUs that I had, the more revenue that I had coming in. So my initial investment was primarily what I suggested was to just to buy influence and stock my products, stock my store with products. After that, I started to get an itch to grow even faster. I had so much capital coming in that I started getting into PPC, and that's when I started buying traffic and started buying media, started planning a media buying calendar and driving traffic to landing pages on my e-commerce store and started selling the most profitable products that I had in inventory at that time. And I used tools like SEMrush. I would make a list of all my top competitors, including Wayfair, Overstock.com, Amazon.com, and I would just completely reverse engineer their advertising strategies using tools like SEMrush. And that would be my strategy for growing my e-commerce business in a nutshell.
So for someone looking to build an online business, do you have any hiring tips here in those regards?
Yes. So one of the biggest hiring tips that I have, so for me, because I had a technical basis, it was really easy for me to start hiring people. So when I started hiring people, it was easy for me to do a technical interview to determine whether the candidate that was applying for my position would actually has the qualifications and the skills to help grow my business. So when it comes to any online business, when you're starting to build an infrastructure, it's very important to have a code convention to have, because if you hire a programmer that's not experienced, if you don't have a code convention, then what starts to happen is you notice that your site starts to become very slow and it starts to become very difficult to add more developers onto your team to continue to expand your, in this case, it was my e-commerce portal. So having a technical foundation, as much technical knowledge of what you're hiring about, is actually a really a big tip that I recommend for everyone. The second thing is that if you don't have the technical skill sets for what you're hiring for, I recommend that you hire a consultant in the beginning to hire on your behalf. Because one of the worst things that you can do is actually hire the wrong people and put the wrong people into your organization. And so I think those are the two main tips that I have. And the third one that I would recommend is try to think outside the box. So when I first got started, I started outsourcing. So I started hiring a lot of people in Russia, in Ukraine, because I was born in Minsk, Belarus, which is the former part of the Soviet Union. And so my parents immigrated. I came here when I was 5 years old. And so my parents spoke Russian in the household. But in the outside world, I spoke English. And so I was able to articulate and speak my mother language. And so naturally I Googled, made a list on Wikipedia and looked at the minimum wage rates in different countries. And so I naturally gravitated towards Russian. So I was able to build a team of highly qualified people for a lot cheaper. And for those listening, there's always the Philippines, for example. And so I would just recommend that when you're hiring, to think outside the box and to stay outside of the United States, or for some positions like sales, for example, within the United States, where language is a very important barrier to entry.
Quite interesting information and insightful today. We are speaking with Mr. Paul Klebanoff, a marketing educator and speaker at SEMrush.com, the world's leading competitive research tool for online marketers, here on E-Commerce Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Don't forget, you can follow the show on Twitter at ePodcast Network, and we're also streaming on demand 24/7 on TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. Now, Paul, any resources that you would like to recommend to learn more about these topics, and what would you recommend someone just getting started in building an online business?
Right. So right now, as you mentioned, I'm a marketing educator at SEMrush, and so my focus in the company is to really educate our audience on the topics that I've spent years trying to master, that I've grown to love. And so if you just simply follow me, if you add Paul Klebanoff on Twitter, then you can look in the show notes. I always recommend new resources, as well as I'm currently writing a book, and I'm working on my personal website, and I'm working on a lot of educational material. If you just go to SEMrush.com/webinars, you could check out the webinars that I've done on all of these topics, including PPC and SEO. And sorry, just the second part of your question, I would recommend for entrepreneurs that are just getting started is to really try and focus on one thing. Try to focus on your business. So if you're starting a business, I think it's really crucial that you don't split your focus between more than one project. When I started my business, I completely stopped trading. My business became my life. It was something that I focused on wholeheartedly.
Now, shifting gears here a little and touching on your downfalls, what ultimately caused the downfall of your business, and how would you do things differently the second time around?
Right. So what happened was, towards the end, so in the beginning, when I first started, I started growing I started at 2,000 a month, and I started growing to 10, to 15, to 20, to 50, to 100. And so what started to happen is, once I started to hire sales reps to open up accounts on my behalf, they became very effective. So I spent a very small amount of time actually opening accounts. So my vision for my business was to have a hat of e-commerce stores selling the top name brand products in the world. I wanted the creme de la creme, the products, like I said, the furniture brands that you would find selling in Bloomingdale's and in Neiman Marcus. So as my business started to grow, as I would stock more products, as soon as I went over the $1 million mark, I started seeing issues. So let me tell you about one specific problem that was the start of my downfall. So I was profiling my competition, as I mentioned earlier. And what I did was, I found brand name products that received a lot of volume. So I knew people were seeking out the products in large volumes. So, for example, 50,000 searches a month, 100,000 searches a month. And so I made an account with the actual manufacturer, with the sales rep. I started stocking the products. And what started to happen was, as the product would ship to the customer, the product would get damaged. I just don't want to call out the brand on this podcast, but the product would get damaged. And so the customer would start to charge their credit card back. And so I learned a really important lesson in PPC, is that a lot of times the cost per click that you pay is an indicator, because Google AdWords is based on a supply and demand system. So I should have had enough. So I gained insight that just because it gets 100,000 volume, but it has 10 cent CPC costs, doesn't necessarily mean it's a good product to sell. There's a reason why the CPC costs are so low, is because nobody wants to sell that specific product. And so and there was a reason, because by the time it got to the customer's home, the product was damaged. And so they would charge their credit card back. And so when I went over a million in sales, and I started receiving chargebacks, what happened was I went over our chargeback rate. So every merchant has a chargeback rate. What I didn't know at the time was the chargeback ratio, the chargeback rate is different for every category of products, because ultimately the merchant bank that processes your order, the more you sell, the higher the risk it is for the bank, because if anything happens to your business, the merchant is responsible for covering that cost. So the biggest guarantee, the biggest security that you have as a customer is your credit card, because you could always call your credit card company and they'll return your money. They'll cover that money that you lost. And so what happened was, as customers started to charge their credit card back, the merchant started to review my account. And the first review that I had was initially the biggest issue, is because the first problem that they saw was that I had more than one e-commerce store selling different category of products. I was selling ceramic tile. I was selling furniture. I went into selling fishing rods. And so they looked and they saw, well, that's a red flag, because his chargeback rate is high for ceramic tile, but now he's selling all these categories. So they froze my account simply because I wasn't structured properly, and they started to do a review. And so whenever they freeze your bank account, you have no access to capital. You can't process orders. I had campaigns running at the time. I had a lot of traffic. And so I had salespeople on call. And meanwhile, all these customers are calling, but I can't take orders. And I don't have access to my capital, because everything was under review. And so that was the first stepping stone to ultimately me losing my business, was because I didn't structure my accounts properly. After that, what started to happen was I began to understand that while I was, as I suggested, poetic in my business in terms of hiring sales reps to open up accounts, to figure out how to get around the red tape, when it comes to banking, that is something that you definitely don't want to be poetic in, because it's very important that when you set up your accounts that you're 100% honest with the merchants and the banks. And it's not like I was dishonest with them. I just didn't know. I launched sites, but I didn't open up new merchant accounts or update the existing merchants with these new sites. And so what started to happen was simply the first merchant bank closed my account. I started opening up accounts with other merchants. They started seeing that I'm an online business, that I have all these different categories of products. And in the beginning, they placed a high reserve on my account. So the more revenue that you do, the higher the risk. I like to say success is expensive for the bank. And so there was and they saw that I had issues with other merchants. So they placed a reserve. That means an X percentage, and it was a high percentage of my revenue, had to be in a reserve in case it's my money, but I can't touch it. It's money that the bank holds just in case something would happen in your business and they need to cover the cost on your behalf. And so I opened up the second merchant account, and then eventually that merchant account closed me because I was very tight on my business, because a lot of my profits were sitting in a reserve. I had all this money that I couldn't use. And so eventually I was placed on the merchant termination list, which basically suggests that I was terminated and can't process orders online. And my only option was to go overseas to open up offshore merchant banks, which had looser requirements in terms of they had stricter requirements in terms of it was just more costly to do business. So they had a higher surcharge, and they had a higher reserve. And so it was just the higher cost of entry. And ultimately, I started looking for a broker to start trying to sell parts of my business. And so that ultimately led to a lot of problems because I had a lot of revenue. And I had later on, when you start to buy large volumes from vendors, what starts to happen is it doesn't make sense to pay piece by piece. They open up a credit line for you. So I had large credit lines. And so they would bill me on a monthly basis. And so I would have these credit lines open and then eventually just spiraled out of control. And ultimately, it was a heartache and it ultimately collapsed. And I even had some debt left over from that business and still facing today.
Certainly a lot we all can learn from the details you just shared there in response. We really appreciate that, and especially getting into the nitty-gritty there in many regards. Much appreciated once again. Any advice for first-time entrepreneurs or someone interested in starting a business? What advice could you share in that regard?
Yeah. So for first-time entrepreneurs that are interested in starting a business, I would recommend the first thing that I want to tell everyone is your skills always stay with you. So sales, marketing, any technical skills that you have, you cannot lose. Money simply moves from one perception to the next, but your skills always stay. The second thing that I want to tell everyone is that starting a business, it's a very unique challenge in itself. And so I don't really believe in a work-life balance in the context of running your own business, because when we talk about a work-life balance, the question of balance becomes really a question of priority. And so when we act on priority, we automatically get out of balance because we give more time and focus to one thing over the other. And so the more people you have, the more money you manage, the more problems you have, and your business becomes your life. So if you want to be successful in business, it is my belief that you literally have no choice but to prioritize your business over everything else. And if you're not willing to make that commitment, then I really want to say that maybe entrepreneurship or starting a business is not for you. And success is also relative. So when I started my e-commerce business, I had a goal. I reached that goal, and then suddenly I wasn't no longer interested in 1 million. I wanted 100 million, because the more resources you have, the more energy you have to do more things. And so naturally I wanted just to do more, and I had more resources to do more. So it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy in that way.
Good stuff there. And briefly, can you tell us a little bit about where you are now and if you have any special projects lined up?
Yeah. So currently, as it suggested, I'm a marketing educator and speaker at SEMrush.com. I'm currently working on a book. The title of the book is literally Why Do People Buy? It's based on consumer psychology. And then also on SEMrush, I'm working on educational material in the realm of digital marketing. And so I feel like SEMrush is a perfect match for me because my personal goals align with the company goals and the team goals.
Well, Paul, I got to tell you, it's been an incredible story. What a journey. There's so much that we can learn from the pitfalls, the struggles, the trials, and it is clear that you have not given up and you've bounced back. And we got a big, huge congratulations goes out to you for hanging in there. And thank you for all the advice shared here today as well. I do have one last question. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure. No problem.
What is the biggest difference between working for yourself and someone else in conclusion?
All right. So the biggest difference. So before I answer that question, I want to say a few things about SEMrush. So for me, the biggest issue in my transition to a new company was always that I had personal goals, and it was important for the company's goals to align with my personal goals. So after I closed the business, I was never really passionate about the actual products that I sold. What I was really passionate about was the marketing. I was passionate about consumer psychology. I was passionate about direct response marketing, copywriting, search engine optimization. And so my mission became to really develop my knowledge base and then to spread that knowledge. And so when I entered SEMrush, SEMrush really gave me a unique opportunity because it aligned with my personal goals. The second thing about the company that I really enjoy is that I feel like I'm a fan of the product. I used the product before I came into the company. And so it makes it very easy for me to advocate and recommend the tool because the tool was in my journey to success. It was what I used throughout my process, even dating back to when I worked in my cubicle and just started to do SEO in working for someone else. And so the difference between working for yourself and someone else. So I think the biggest difference is first, you don't always get your way, meaning that you brought your, when I was running my own business, I hand selected the people that I worked with every single day. I hand selected the personalities that I worked with. When you work in another company, naturally, you're brought into an organization with a lot of different personalities. And so you always need to form a consensus with your team. And so the end consensus is not something that you can always or ever overrule. You have a say, but you don't necessarily have you don't make the end decision. And so that is the biggest difference for me. The other biggest difference is that as an entrepreneur, as my business started to grow, I had a luxury of removing distractions. So tasks that I didn't want to do, I could easily delegate to other people. I no longer had to do those tasks. And at the time, I wanted to focus 100% on my business. So everything from laundry to driving, everything that took my focus off the business, I delegated out. And so essentially, I created a bubble, and it allowed me to focus my energy with no distractions 100% on the business, something that is not really possible when you work within an existing organization. With that said, I feel lucky to be a part of a company like SEMrush because its structure is different. It has more of a team structure. So culturally, it's different. It's more flat. There's no hierarchy of managers. And I feel like it aligns with my entrepreneurial spirit. And so I feel that for those that are looking to work for someone else, just to make sure that your personal goals align with the company goals. Because if you're personally aligned with the company goals, everything becomes a lot easier. I had opportunities to work at other companies where it wasn't aligned with my personal goals, and I just merely said no to the offer just because I didn't see myself being passionate and working within that organization.
Well, Paul, it certainly has been my pleasure to have met you. Certainly appreciate your sharing your journey with us, a little bit of that. We really have learned a lot today. And thanks for joining us here today on eCommerce Radio.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
We have been speaking with Mr. Paul Klebanoff, a marketing educator and speaker at SEMrush.com, the world's leading competitive research tool for online marketers. And once again, the website of reference is SEMrush.com. And this is Eric Dine. You've been listening to eCommerce Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Pick up our iPhone or Android mobile app for your mobile listening convenience. And once again, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to eCommerce Radio. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.